The Night Owl Podcast, Episode 48, The Haunted Pompeii House, Part 3. Welcome to the Night Owl Podcast. I'm your host, Stephen Ballou, and this is a place for all your restless spirits out there to tune in and hear true tales of the paranormal. I hunt these stories down, capture them from the mouths of those who've experienced them, and share them with you, right here. We're currently looking for more personal ghost stories or haunted locations, so if you or someone you know has one, please submit it to us for consideration. Go to thenightowlpodcast.com, click on the Submit Your Story page, and let us hear your ghost story. In the previous two episodes, we've been investigating the mysterious happenings at the Pompeii House, a transplanted historic home now sitting atop a cliffside in far west Austin. Homeowners Kevin, Sherry, and their six-year-old daughter Jolene have been having strange experiences since moving in 2018. Through interviews, we learned that the family were having sightings of what they believed to be a spirit of a little girl in white stockings, shadow figures in doorways and hallways, disembodied voices calling both Sherry and Joe throughout the house, and lastly, the previous homeowner who passed away while living in the home has been felt throughout the upstairs front room and parlor. Following our interviews, we decided to bring in our psychic friend Jeffrey to see if he could connect any dots between the sightings, the history, and what he might pick up on his visit. Jeffrey validated many experiences, including the previous homeowner's presence, but he also brought to light a slightly more unsettling presence that seemed to like watching the homeowner's daughter, Jo, sleep at night, which led the family to open up for the first time about Jolene's night terrors and her fear of sleeping alone. But then, at the end of this initial investigation, a psychic medium named Michelle, with no connection to this case, my team, or this family, was pulled into this story in a unique way. Now, in this episode, we continue our adventure at the Pompeii House, this time with this unexpected new psychic medium joining us from North Texas. Stay tuned. Hey Night Owls, join me in welcoming our new sponsor, Factor. With Factor Meals, all the prep work, cooking, and cleaning is taken care of for you. Your meals arrive 100% ready to heat and eat. Go to factormeals.com/nightowl50 and use code NIGHTOWL50 to get 50% off. Also, this podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp Therapy Online. If you want to live a more empowered life, therapy can get you there. Visit betterhelp.com/nightowl today to get 10% off your first month. And last but not least, thank you to AG1 for their continued support of the Night Owl Podcast. If you want to take ownership of your health, try AG1 and get a free one-year supply of vitamin D3, K2, and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase. Go to drinkag1.com/nightowl. Okay, Night Owls, who's ready for another big Night Owl event? Not a small ghost tour, but I'm talking about a huge social event with a spooky market, panels and lectures on the paranormal, and a live taping of the show. Well, I sure as hell am. So keep your October open, because we have something brewing, and we'll be announcing more details soon. In the meantime, if you'd like to win a free VIP pass for you and a guest to attend this event, you can submit your own personal ghost story to put yourself in the running to be one of our few live ghost stories that we'll feature at this event. Email us at thenightowlpodcast@gmail.com with the subject heading Live Storyteller. Then, describe your ghost story in detail in this email, and you'll be considered for the event. If you're selected, you will win a free VIP pass for you and a plus one to attend this event, meet the Night Owl team, and be featured in a live taping of the show. For now, the details for this event are limited, but just know it will take place in October of 2024 in Austin, Texas. Stay tuned. One other thing, for this particular episode, I have to give a big shout out and thank you to a good friend of the show, Cecily, who helped us out on this particular case by providing our visiting psychic medium lodging during her stay here for the Pompeii House investigation. For her generosity, I'd like to give her and what she does a little shout out. Cecily is not only a friend and fan of the Night Owl Podcast, she's also a creativity coach, tarot reader, writer, and creator of Typewriter Tarot, which helps people live more creative and magical lives. So if you're a creative spirit with an interest in magic, tarot, healing your creativity wounds, or deepening your spiritual practice, check out Cecily's work at typewritertarot.com or on Instagram at typewritertarot. Thanks, Cecily. At the close of the previous episode, you may recall that our psychic friend Jeffrey had picked up on the previous homeowner, who Kevin and Sherry strongly believed remained in their home. Jeffrey was even given a lineup of random photographs of men, and he picked John out in this lineup, which was impressive. But Jeffrey had picked up on a darker male presence, possibly in shadow form, that he got images of standing in their daughter's doorway and watching her sleep. Eerily, unbeknownst to me, Sherry confirmed in that moment that Joe actually does wake up screaming at night almost every night and cannot sleep alone. We weren't sure where this case was going to go next. That is, until I was on another case regarding a haunted tattoo shop involving another psychic medium named Michelle. When I conducted my first interview with her and her experiences at the tattoo shop, she surprisingly began to pick up on things about the Pompey House on our call. It led to the shocking revelation that she was picking up on one of the more prominent spirits this family has seen. The following is the aforementioned call that took the unexpected turn where Michelle had absolutely no knowledge or connection to the Pompey House and the several calls that followed. She was now invested, and we planned to continue talking until she could find a way to get down to Austin, Texas and visit the home once and for all.
The house that you're doing, does it... Hold on. Let me think on it. Let me develop it a little bit, and I'll give you a call or I'll send you a text.
Well, now I want to know more because I purposely didn't tell you it was a house, but it is a house.
Oh, I didn't even think about it.
Yeah, I was avoiding the issue. I kept saying building because I didn't want to give you that clue, but it is a home.
Right. Does it have a porch on two sides?
Yes.
And this house, I believe, is put on a structure to where the concrete is around the edges of it, and it doesn't really have a lot of footing underneath, so probably some kind of stones or something. I feel like there's a little girl in it, a little girl spirit. So I see a little girl standing outside of it in a pair of patent leather dresses. She's a city girl because she, like my people were poor. So they lived in the country and they didn't have shoes except for church in winter.
Yeah.
But this little girl, it's obviously spring and she has shoes and stockings and a white dress on. I feel like 30s or 40s. And she would have, yeah, that little dress on with the little belt and the puffy kind of lay down sleeves, but she definitely has stockings on and a pair of patent leather shoes. And there is something really odd about it. There is something. It's like it's above me. It's like I see a square house, but I almost feel like there's something above it, like an attic or maybe another floor, like maybe a two-story.
You're getting a lot, yeah. I keep going. I'm going to document this.
So I feel like it's, you know, something's above me and it's very heavy. I feel like almost like a roof leaking, like that kind of stain, but it feels very yuck, like, ugh. I get a lot of yuck feeling from this place. Like it's kind of a torn dwelling. Yeah, there is definitely yuck and there's a smell, but it's not like a demon smell. It's like a yuck smell.
Just in the first few minutes of this call, Michelle was hitting on the little girl with stockings, and I believe the odd feeling she was having above could be the fact that this house was an oddity in itself. The original 1875 dwelling sits atop of this home built in the 80s, carved into the cliffside below. But this last thing, the yuck feeling and feeling of something leaking from the roof, brought to mind something that Sherry shared with us in the last episode.
It was infested with raccoons and ringtail cats. The previous owner, John, had been putting buckets in the attic for the raccoons to use, so he knew they were there. And I guess it was like switching out the buckets for them so they wouldn't mess the whole attic. By the time we moved in, those buckets were full and overflowing with raccoon feces. The raccoons had punched a bunch of the windows out, especially in the attic area. There used to be a lot more stained glass, but the raccoons destroyed all of it to get into the house. And then because of that, there was just like the urine problem with raccoons going to the bathroom in the attic and not great insulation.
Michelle continued to get more on this call.
So somebody who lived in that, this house is old. Like, God, I'm seeing like 1910 to 1928. Do they keep any of the furniture?
Yep.
So I'm seeing an old lady and a small chair. And I don't know. That's what I'm getting right now. So maybe we'll see how accurate those were. It's kind of crazy because I won't really get confirmation until I get there. So it'll kind of like haunt me until I get there.
I wasn't going to give any confirmation to Michelle yet, but I noted that this old lady she saw might tie in with the old lady that Jeffrey saw on his first visit, which oddly the homeowners have never seen or reported. But I always find it intriguing when two psychics who don't have any contact with one another pick up the same things at the same location. But before this call ended, I wanted to get as much detail from Michelle as I could about the girl with stockings.
So the little girl has shoulder-length hair. The shoes, I believe, are white. They have a strap over the top. She may have little anklet socks on. The stockings are starting to kind of slid down because stockings didn't necessarily go over panties back then. A lot of times stockings just went up above the knee. But she definitely has like a little pair of Mary Janes on.
How old does she look to you, like in her spirit form? Do you know?
Between 8 and 10. I think there's a bully in the house. Like, I feel like they're not bad spirits in the house, but I feel like there's one that's kind of a bully that does kind of crappy things.
We ended the call here, and I was left pondering this bully that Michelle mentioned. I recall that Kevin believed this stocking girl spirit might be shoving Jo and causing her to fall often in the doorway from the kitchen to the front room. But I wasn't sure now if Michelle was picking up on that behavior or perhaps another spirit in the home. But to my surprise, just 6 days after this first call, Michelle contacted me because she was now getting bombarded with things she believed was tied to this house. Please note that I didn't include it, but on this previous call with Michelle, she picked up on a young girl living in the home and asked if there was a child there. I did confirm there was and let her know it was just a husband, a wife, and their daughter in the home. But I gave her no more details beyond this.
Okay.
Yeah, so let me know what's going on. You've been picking up on some things?
So I see this little girl and she's sleeping. She's got like sandy brown hair, kind of light. And I see something tugging on the corner of her blanket. And I see her waking up. I feel like it might be the little girl at this house, because that's the only house I've linked into lately. I've tried to avoid anything else. Now, I've been waking up like almost every hour, every 2 hours on the dot. I shouldn't be waking up like that.
Yeah.
And I feel my blanket being tugged on. It's not me. I see a bed. I'm very curious to get there and see this little girl's room. Here's the thing that I'm wondering is if I think this little girl may be a sensitive. I don't know why, but I continuously hear guide her. Well, there's only, as far as I know, there's only two hers, and that would be the mother and the daughter. So I don't know. I think it's the daughter. I really need to talk to the mom and the daughter. Actually, I need to talk to the mother, the father, and the daughter away from the house, like maybe have coffee or something. Because I need to meet them before I go to the house because I don't want the spirit to know that I'm coming. I'm actually worried if this girl is a sensitive in this negative spirit, because I do feel a negative spirit.
You do? Okay.
At first, I felt it was like a big brother that was bullying and picking just little stuff, you know? I actually feel now that it's big brother's maturing. And I think that the more, I don't know if he's eating fear and pulling energy off of it, or if he's trying to start an attachment with her. She's right at the right age for that. And the pulling on the blanket, that makes me very nervous. I get very yuck when a spirit pulls on a child's blanket. That is every kind of wrong there is, because the child is usually sleeping. The child is vulnerable. The child is, you know, what positive thing would pull a blanket off of a child? I don't like it. This spirit is not a child that's doing this to this little girl. It's a male, absolutely male. Have the parents acknowledged that he's been pulling on her blanket?
They don't know. They just know that she wakes up scared and they're having to like sleep with her a lot. She's not able to sleep in her own room, I don't think. I don't know if she's getting more scared more recently or what's going on. I need to get to the bottom of more of like where the fear started.
I just need to get there. I need to help. Yeah. I need to help that little girl. I won't be there till after Halloween. But I do believe that things are getting stronger at the house. I believe that it's not getting better. It's getting worse.
Okay.
And I think it will continue to get worse. But don't tell the parents, because I don't think she's in immediate harm.
Okay.
But I don't want them getting freaked out and her getting freaked out more.
I do want to make sure that they know that we want to get there and help, but I don't want to make them more anxious, you know, just because I think they're not sure what's going to happen if, you know, we go poking around. And I told them we don't bring tools. We don't prod. We literally kind of go and absorb and discover. And we're going to try our best to not aggravate, you know?
Yeah. The little girl is my main priority.
Michelle had just picked up on Joe and the fact that she too was waking up scared, just like Jeffrey had picked up on without any of us knowing any of this. I knew we were onto something important here, and all I could think about was this darker shadow that Jeffrey had sensed watching Joe sleep on his first visit. I still had not shared any of this with Michelle, and she was hitting on everything, down to the specific detail of Joe's sandy brown hair, which was 100% accurate. But next, Michelle sent me a sketch that she'd done of a stairwell. She thought it was tied to this house.
This is going to sound really cliche, but this is what's coming through. I'm actually feeling like somebody is being shoved. Like I see a human with skin, like grabbing hold of the wall as if to catch balance.
The pushing is another potential hit. I didn't include it in the episode because it didn't seem paranormal, but a good friend of Sherry and Kevin's had actually fallen down these very steps during a visit. And Jo herself has actually fallen down these stairs as well. Not to mention, there's also been the recurring instance of Jo tripping and falling as if she was being pushed in that doorway from the kitchen to the front room.
But I also got a visual that I just drew, because I'm drawing while I'm talking. But this room, I keep going back to this stairwell. I don't know if that looks familiar to you. I don't know if the door is a front door or maybe a parlor or living room. But you would be looking through it, and the stairs would kind of be right there. You could see, and then the stairs kind of get lost, and then there's a window.
There is stairs. I don't remember if there's a window.
Maybe when I drew the window, like the center, it actually turned out looking more like a cross than a window pane.
Let me send you something.
Okay.
So in the sketch she drew of this stairwell, there was a cross drawn on the left wall. She also drew a man beside the stairwell sketch. While she was telling me about this, I went to my photographs on my phone that I had my team members taking with my phone on our last visit there. There was an actual picture of me standing at the top of this stairwell at the Pompey house. Weird thing is I'm actually standing in the exact same position that she drew the man in the sketch next to the stairwell. And there were some odd similarities to me and this sketch. But to my shock, there were windows on the right side of the stairwell, and the sunlight shining through them hit the panes and were casting shadows that looked like crosses on the left wall. This was really intriguing.
It's the shadow. It's the shadow of the crosses in the window.
Yep.
That's the staircase. Yeah.
That is exactly it.
So it was clear Michelle had a pretty solid link to this location remotely. We ended the call with the next steps to coordinate a trip for her. I needed to find lodging and work out schedules with the homeowners, but before we had nailed this down, Michelle had gotten even more about the house. She texted me that she was seeing a lot of books and didn't know why. Well, I knew why. The previous homeowner's massive collection and library was still in the house. Kevin and Sherry kept them because they had so much character. So I wanted to hop on a call and just document what she was getting here.
Kind of go from the beginning of like what you were picking up as far as bring about the book. Like, how did that come to you?
When I was painting a wall the other day, I was trying to just stay focused on the case and kind of concentrate, stay linked in with it. And I saw an image of books, and I've seen several images of books since then. I saw a stack of old vintage books, and then I saw some kind of library-ish scene kind of popped in and out of my head periodically. And I also have been hearing the sound of books being shuffled, like when you would open up a book and be looking for a page and you would thumb through it. But so far, that's all I've gotten that has come through about the books. I also, prior to the book, since we got off the phone last time, I had the male presence, Maleficent one, that messing with the child came through and asked me where I was. And I told him, I'll be there soon. So he comes through periodically about once a day, kind of taunting me, like, you're not here. Where are you? I'm waiting. I'm getting the last 3 days or so, I'm getting a lot of aggravated, I'm waiting. And I pretty much told him that he's on my schedule, I'm not on his schedule, and that if he wants to speak to me, he can speak to me when I get there. I think that this dark energy that is around now, I think is kind of stifling the positivity that could be in the house. I don't think any of the other ones are bad. They haven't really came out and spoke. I don't know if they actually can or if they can't because they're scared of him. Because he seems to be very...
Hold on.
Yeah.
I feel like he's choking me.
Ooh. I don't think he's liking the fact that I know there's more. He wants all the attention. If things are going the way that they feel like they're going, the spirit needs to go, because it could be life-changing for this child and not in a positive way.
Despite this more unsettling update, the good news is I had found lodging, thanks to Night Owl friend Cecily in Austin, Texas, who offered her guest house as a place for Michelle to stay. And even better, Michelle was actually going to be on her way to Austin the very next day after this call. Okay, it's Saturday, November 4th. Here with Michelle for the first time. We're going to make our way down to the house. It was the early afternoon and quite a gorgeous day here when we arrived. We'd arranged to explore the house without the family present first. Also, I had hardly any of my team with me today, as many had to work, were traveling, or had previous obligations. So today I had to enlist the help of Tristan and Devin, who helped me manage my Night Owl events. They were here to photograph and document for the day. So you might hear a few new voices in this episode. And sadly, Jeffrey had just gotten back from a long trip to New Orleans and was not feeling well, so he just could not make it. It was just going to be Michelle on her own today. And for right now, Michelle was going to do a first pass of the home. Then we were going to go meet the family at a nearby coffee shop to go over her findings and a game plan for later this evening. Then we would finally return back to this home and see it at night for the very first time. Alexis would be joining us for this and possibly assisting with ceremony and cleansings if needed. But right now, we made our way down to the front door and into the home. As soon as we entered the home, you can hear Michelle say, "Hello, books." She had her confirmation for what she'd been seeing. And when we walked into the parlor, the library she saw in her visions was now right in front of her. But here, she actually began to pick up on a presence already. We are in the parlor.
Everything is jumping from timeline to timeline.
Yeah, just take your time. Don't rush. You do what you need to do.
Who are you? You sat here. She couldn't go outside. This overlooked a garden. It was planted for her because she couldn't think this might be. How old are you? Why are you in this house still?
What's this girl look like? This one. Is this one that you have drawn already?
Yes, that's the one in the bottom.
The 17, 16-year-old?
She's sickly. You're not, that's just how I'm going to describe it. You are sick. Your heart, okay.
This was a teenage girl who seemed to be in a wheelchair in the parlor. She didn't seem very significant and may have been a residual, but Michelle began to slightly feel the darker presence and was distracted in this moment.
He's watching.
I'm here. You have been asking me when I'm going to get here. I'm here. I told you I was coming.
She said, be careful. I guess he's a pusher.
The darker presence seemed to be hiding, and Michelle wasn't able to connect yet. But still, here in the parlor, Michelle was pulled to the attic room above, the one that Kevin had made into his recording studio. She made her way up the staircase and sat at the top of them, and began having a conversation with a very young boy. I want to note that the homeowner's dogs were put outside in their backyard, so throughout this episode, you're going to hear sounds that sound like yelping or screaming or barking, and that's just them. They're not EVPs.
This is original. Mm-hmm. It's just not the same use.
Yeah, I think it may have just been
that
attic.
Opening was somewhere there, because I can see children going in it. Some kids slept up here. There was a bunch of hay beds. I can smell the hay. I can feel you. What's your name, buddy? Really neat room. Yeah? It's very nice. How many of you? Are these your brothers and sisters? The mean one. Is the mean one like you? I like how you talk. Can you tell me names? Oh, Henry's a nice name. I got a grandbaby named Henry. Is that your name? Are you five? If you go to town, how do you go to town? Do you walk? You don't walk. How do you go? You have a carriage? You have a buggy? And horses? Just one horse? What is this that you showed me, this line? Okay. You can talk. You can't talk anymore? Why? Why can't you talk anymore? The mean one. Does he not like you to talk? What does he look like? What does the mean one look like? No. He said no. Okay.
This time's pretty far back with the wagon type thing.
Yeah. Who is the mean one? Can someone tell me who the mean one is? Because he's not talking to me now that I'm here. He talked a lot while I was gone. No one? Hurt? What hurt you? No. He says no. No, you weren't hurt, or no, you can't say? The mean one. Is the mean one have skin like you? Or can you just see him?
What does that mean, like, for them? What do you mean?
So he's a ghost. So you can't touch him? No, they can't touch him. But you see him. You do see him. Does everyone see him? Oh, the mean one. That's all he keeps saying. He's getting scared. Okay, it's okay. It's okay. You don't have to be scared. It's okay. The mean one just wants to talk to me. Okay, sweetheart. It's okay. Henry is your name. Okay, Henry. Thank you, sweetheart. You just go back and hide, okay? I'll handle the mean one. Where did you learn that word, that ghost word? Is that... How do you know what a ghost is? A spook. That's what they call it? It's what you call a spook, but now they call them ghosts. So you've learned from... Okay. Okay, Henry. We'll do what we can. Thank you, sweetheart. Go hide now so I can talk to the mean one. He said that they're all gone. He's the only one left. He said that they left him. And he just wants to go with them. So Henry's the only boy left.
A little boy spirit wasn't something reported anywhere in the house, but some things to note here are the fact that he was showing a buggy with horses. The original owner of this home in 1875 was a wheelwright who made wheels for buggies and carriages. However, out of this man, his wife, and his children, there was no Henry tied to their family. The other interesting thing was how Henry was referring to this darker presence as the mean one, and he was seemingly saying that he didn't appear to be a man. He even shared details like he didn't have skin, which I didn't include here. We interpreted this and many other things he said about it being a ghost might be that he meant he was seeing a shadow figure, nothing that had an actual human appearance to it, which tied in with what Kevin was seeing in the doorways and what Jeffrey saw downstairs. So now, we needed to go see if we could track down this presence. Michelle and I made our way downstairs for the first time, and she felt out the space and rooms, but this darker presence was still not coming to her. When we made it to the guest room, however, she was very uneasy and didn't feel comfortable about it at all. Now, this room doesn't have much reported around it, only the double doors opening on their own.
I actually don't want to go in there. I don't know why. Is this the master?
This is like the guest downstairs, but I definitely want to know what you get in here if you're getting something.
I really don't like this room. I don't know what it is. It's a really weird feeling.
It's crazy because this room is really nice.
It is beautiful.
What are you getting?
I don't know. I just know I didn't want to come in this room.
Oddly enough, in this very moment, I had just gotten a text from Sherry, and the text was about the guest room. Apparently, Joe had an experience last night in this very room. I was dying to know what it was, but we wouldn't learn until we met up with them at the coffee shop soon. But in this moment, Michelle was still not picking up much from this darker presence, so we decided to explore outside a bit.
Okay, we came outside on the back patio, the addition patio.
I think the old lady belongs here. I think she's tied to the land, not the house. And these hagstones are important. I have hagstones. Like, it's important. It's at my doorway. It's the only place I'll put it. It has to go by my door. And it's fascinating. I know that they're native here, but this is a lot of hagstone, man. This is like collection quality hagstones. I feel like the old lady's attached to this
land more so than the original.
Yeah. And she would be in 70s clothes. So it would have been, she would have been alive and dead in the 70s. Because, I mean, it's, you can't miss the 60s and 70s clothes.
Mm-hmm.
Which could be why she's not coming through. Maybe she's just a vibration. Maybe she's just, she's not as strong. She's just kind of.
This older female spirit didn't seem to have too much significance to the story, but it was interesting to include here as Jeffrey picked up on a similar presence during his visit as well. Same time period and same age as well.
I don't understand the mindset of the mean one right now. I expected him to be more aggressive when I got here. Is he lying? I just don't know. It's very confusing.
We were both confused about this darker presence and why he wasn't making himself known. But we decided to revisit the guest room downstairs since that's where Michelle had felt the most uneasy.
I really don't like this room. It makes me very nervous.
Okay, we're going back into the guest downstairs bedroom for a second time.
I just don't like it. It's really heavy in here. It's hard to breathe. I'm so drawn to this corner. What are you guys trying to tell me?
The corner Michelle's standing in that she felt the most uncomfortable was a corner that had a tiny round hobbit-like door, like for a child to go through. It leads outside to a pond and garden area. There's also a bookshelf to the right of this door. I'm making note of this because it comes into play later. But now it was time to venture to the nearby coffee shop to meet up with the family. On our way back to my truck, I asked Michelle about the girl with the stockings.
And you never picked up on that little girl with stockings while you were here?
No. That door is the only thing that even made me spark on her, the little hobbit door.
Downstairs on the, yeah, in that room? Okay.
Yeah, but not here. That little girl that first came through, she's not here.
So there were no signs of the little girl with stockings, which I found interesting, because Jeffrey never once picked up on her on his visit either. But I found it odd that Michelle had picked her up so strongly remotely from afar. When we get back from this short break, we'll arrive at the coffee shop and introduce Michelle to the family. Stay tuned. This episode of the Night Owl Podcast is sponsored by AG1. Visit drinkag1.com/nightowl and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3 K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase, exclusively at drinkag1.com/nightowl. Whether we like it or not, we're getting older, and with the passage of time, our body's nutritional requirements are changing as well. Providing our bodies with the proper vitamins and supplements should not be complicated, and it certainly doesn't have to be. The thought of taking multiple supplements and vitamins, keeping track of what I took and when, and having to purchase all these pills, powders, and concoctions from all over town sounds absurdly exhausting. Taking care of your health isn't always easy, but it should at least be simple. Why not do what I do? Just one scoop of AG1 covers all my bases when it comes to providing my body with what it needs for essential brain, gut, and immune health support with vitamins, probiotics, and essential nutrients. I know that with AG1, I'm giving my body the highest quality nutrition as well. AG1 is NSF certified, which means that their product has consistently met or exceeded the standards for quality and safety in the US. Every batch of AG1 goes through a rigorous testing process, so you know it's safe, and all their ingredients are sourced for the highest absorption, potency, and nutrient density. My body is my temple, and I definitely care about what goes into it. So for me, it's one scoop once a day, every day, for complete and simple quality nutritional health. If there's one product I had to recommend to elevate your health, it's AG1, and that's why we've partnered with them for so long. So if you want to take ownership of your health, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3, K2, and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase, exclusively at drinkag1.com/nightowl. That's drinkag1.com/nightowl. Check it out. On this episode of the Night Owl Podcast, we welcome a new sponsor to the show, Factor Meals, America's number one ready-to-eat meal kit. Why not try it for yourself? Head to factormeals.com/nightowl50 and use code NIGHTOWL50 to get 50% off. Factor is the perfect solution for anyone looking for fast, delicious, chef-curated meals that are delivered straight to your doorstep. These are no-prep, no-mess meals that arrive 100% ready to heat and eat, so the hassle of shopping, prepping, cooking, and everyone's favorite, cleaning, is gone. Each menu item for Factor is fresh, never frozen, designed by dietitians and chef-crafted to provide you with a nutritious, restaurant-quality meal. You'll have over 35 different menu items to choose from each week, including Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, vegan and veggie options, and more. I recently had Factor's spicy beef poblano bowl, and let me tell you, it was absolutely delicious. Perfectly seasoned ground beef with broccoli rice, poblano and jalapeno peppers, and scallion sour cream. What's not to love? Typically, lunchtime for me consists of unhealthy grazing on things like chips, crackers, or whatever else is handy, because I just don't have the time to prepare anything healthy or substantial. This meal from Factor provided me with a healthy, keto-friendly, nutritious lunch that was not only tasty, but much healthier than my usual noontime fare. And it took only 2 minutes to prepare. Getting your own Factor meals delivered to your home couldn't be any easier. Visit factormeals.com, pick your meals, let their gourmet chefs prepare the meals for you, and then it's just heat, eat, and enjoy. Head to factormeals.com/nightowl50 and use code nightowl50 to get 50% off. That's code nightowl50 at factormeals.com/nightowl50 to get 50% off. By now, we'd arrived at the coffee shop. We found a place to sit outside on the patio where we'd have some privacy, and I decided to get straight to the point in discussing this darker male presence.
Jeffrey came and I kind of told you the things that he picked up on, right?
Yeah.
So it was a little different. He talked to her a little bit about it, but there was like a taller figure.
Yeah.
But he was seeing it down in her bedroom watching. So I was a little like, okay, that was not what y'all reported. Don't know if that's a source for her unable to sleep. And I don't know if she's open to talk, if she's had sightings like that. But I would not have taken it as seriously, but when she got on a call, she saw the same thing. She was like, I see a girl with dusty brown hair waking up scared. There's a male watching her sleep.
Yeah.
And I did not like the way that sounded, especially hearing Jeffrey, what they'd never connected before. So this is where it gets tricky, and we want to be very sensitive with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was very aggressive to her.
From at the house, she not was, at your house, not but at your, my house. At the house, at I the was horrified.
At her house.
At
I
your
was,
house.
I was, yeah, I was worried for your daughter. I was worried
yeah,
for
no,
me.
Yeah, that freaks me out.
Okay, so.
Well, before she goes, you told me the story about seeing the little girl with the stockings.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I was curious. I know you told me as much as you could. I'll be honest, on your call, you liked all these spirits. Uh-huh. But then for some reason, when it came to talking about your daughter, you got angry and said, if it's messing with my daughter, I want it out. So
yeah.
Is there something that's come with the, like, is there more that maybe you haven't shared that has made you angry?
That maybe you forgot about in the beginning, but has came to you since.
I mean, there was a point where, in that doorway.
You told me about that.
Okay, where she'd trip there.
Tell her about that.
Well, is it the stairs, the top of the stairs?
It's right by where you go in the kitchen, where the current
okay.
kitchen is.
Yeah, yeah.
Just that doorway.
That threshold.
She would trip there
always.
The and I'd watch it and I'd be like, there's no.
So I can tell you, I do believe that your daughter has special abilities. Absolutely. Keep that in mind when you're dealing with anything, that she's going to be more sensitive to everything.
Yeah.
This reminded me, I wanted to ask about what Joe had experienced in the guest room the night prior. So I asked Sherry if she could bring Joe over to tell us.
Do you want to tell them what happened?
So what happened was, I couldn't go to bed in the sleep, and I was facing this way in the bed, and then I turned this way, and there's this little brown table, and I looked, and I thought I saw, a little girl. She looked like she was 8 years old, and she was holding something, and she was sitting down.
Yeah.
And it looked, she had, my type of hair, except it was all curly everywhere.
Could you guess what maybe was in her hands? What did it look like?
It looked like a bracelet or like a necklace or something.
Oh, okay. Nice. And that's your first time to see her, right?
Yeah.
You said she thought she didn't even notice you probably, right?
Yeah, she was just like
she was
distracted.
Just like,
yeah, she was distracted.
But I saw her
Yeah, that's okay to see her.
And you didn't want to tell her to go away because you thought it might hurt her feelings or something?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I just did. And then left. I stayed there for a couple of minutes thinking, what was that I just saw? And then I went, I'm just going to go upstairs.
Yeah. She probably just thinks you're a really cool kid and she just wants to hang out with you because she just has a stinky old boy around there to play with. Mm. So she probably just wanted to play with the little girl.
At this time, I had Michelle inform the family about the spirit Henry.
So you have a little boy in there, too, that was left over from all the children, and his name is Henry. And he's the only one left, and he's really, really sad. And he needs to be let loose. Like, he needs to be sent away. He's not going to hurt anything, but he's just... I was sitting at the top of your loft area in the where the music equipment is. The kid is just so sad. Yeah. Like, he wants to be with his friends. All his friends are gone, and he's the only one left.
And he was from an era with... He showed a wagon.
Yes.
And the first owner... What was the year again? I'm blanking on. It was
1875.
Okay, yeah.
That makes sense.
He was a wheelwright.
Oh, yeah,
so
that's
he made
right.
wagon wheels.
He made wagon wheels.
Gosh.
I wanted Michelle in this moment to recap what she'd picked up on both remotely on the phone and on this short first walkthrough she just did. Keep in mind, she mentions four spirits, but she doesn't really include the girl with the stockings, so she really meant to say five when she mentions the total spirits.
So right now what we're dealing with is four for me. I have two males and two females. One female is the sweet little lady that everybody wants because she's amazing, and I think she's definitely beneficial for that one to be around.
Yeah.
If you have to interact with a spirit, I hope it's that one to be the first one. And the little girl is also good with the curly hair. So, and then there's a male Henry. This is one of the little boys. He's like five. And he stays in the parlor and up in your music area. And he said it's hot up there because he can't sleep.
Now, the girl you're referring to, you haven't really told them much about her, but she was a sick...
She was born with a broken heart, is what she told me. And she sits, you know how you have the bay window? So she sits kind of at the farthest pane, kind of facing out the other farthest pane. But she keeps showing me that something is different. Her sight is blocked a little bit. It's almost like the windows got widened, like the framework at some point got widened because she can't see out as well.
That parlor was facing a street. That was the front of the house.
Okay.
So I wonder if she would have looked out of that before, you would have seen...
Because I see flowers out there. She's looking at flowers, so maybe they had a flower bed out there, like gardenias or something like that. She's not saying anything, but I just know that she's kind of... She can't move her chair.
Yeah.
She's firmly set there. But I kept drawing, this is a wheelchair for me. See the wheels in the seat? And I kept getting that for her. So I didn't encounter the mean one that everyone's telling me about, even though he didn't ask for me. And he's not came through yet. So he's a bully, which would come through where I said, I think it's a big brother who's bullying. I don't think he's gone.
At this moment, Kevin actually decided to open up more about something he feels but didn't share with us in our initial interviews.
There's something I feel when I'm in that main room. I can feel what's probably John when I'm writing or something. I can feel someone that's there and kind of
watching,
but helping, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Then there's another thing I feel, which is...
The mean.
And that's when I'm like, go away.
Yeah.
I don't...
You can definitely feel the energy.
Yeah.
It's a heavy, sickening kind of creep. Like, get back. Like, if somebody came up on you like that, you're like, you better step.
Yeah.
Two steps back, bud.
There's nights that I'll be...
Yeah.
If I get up to get water in the night, I'll just feel it and I'll go, get the hell away. Yeah.
You know. Where's this area?
Where's the door?
It's just like the door to the bedroom.
Because
she'll come up, and when she gets scared, she'll come up. And I know exactly what... It's just right when you go out there in that kitchen area and it's dark and you look, you just go, he's there, and he's there every night.
Yeah.
That, whatever that is, that's what I want to get out.
About what time?
7 till all night.
I think we need to see if it comes out, because that's the thing is they can be elusive sometimes, and they know they have their schedule sometimes.
Yeah.
And they also
tried hard to get me here. He was extremely aggressive.
Yeah.
Like, he and I were having battles at the house because he was like, he's very much poke you in the forehead.
While you're saying this, I hear someone says my name, and it's a man's voice, and it sounds like commanding.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I was laying, and this just happened maybe a week ago.
This happened three nights ago to you.
I woke up, I was laying in bed, and it just goes, Sherry. And I go, what? And then I was like, I'm the only person in the house.
Yeah.
This is that voice again. But I texted you when that happened, because it's a man's voice, and it's like...
Sherry sleeps in the guest room often, and this is where the voice incident occurred recently. so I shared with her how Michelle was feeling uncomfortable there as well.
They sleep in that room that you were uncomfortable in the most.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It's funny, when you were saying that, I was like, I sleep there every night, and I started...
It's a very heavy room. Does she have nightmares in that room?
Yes, and she cries in her sleep in the room.
I did not want to be in there. I did not want to be in there at all.
But see, part of why I even sleep in there is because she doesn't sleep alone in her bed, and then she would come up with me and Kevin, and then neither one of us was getting sleep. So I just sleep down there, and I'm like, hey, if you wake up, which she does every night, wakes up scared.
Yeah.
I'm like, just walk across the hall, and I'm in the guest bedroom.
Does she remember her dreams? Does she remember why she's scared?
No, and when she wakes up, it's like night terrors. So she'll be just like screaming and crying, and I'll go, Joe, hey, it's okay. And I'll be like, what scared you? And she's like, I don't know.
She just knows she's horrified.
There were still a lot of uncertain things for us on this case. The only thing I knew is that we had never been to this house at night with a psychic medium. Jeffrey's first visit was only in the early part of the day, so I was eager to head back to the Pompey house with Michelle and the family in tow. We arrived back at the Pompey house at sunset. The plan was to let the family settle in and do their normal routine, and while we waited for Alexis to arrive, Michelle and I would venture downstairs and see if she could find this elusive darker spirit.
We're making our way downstairs for the first time while the family's upstairs having a little snack and dinner. We're just going to see what the energy is like down here with them here.
Michelle had gravitated back to the guest room and was standing between the hobbit door and the bookshelf again.
That makes me nervous. I just heard you're not seeing it. What am I not seeing? You're going to have to be more exact about what am I not seeing.
She had the feeling something important was here but couldn't place it. She needed to talk to the family about objects in the area and see if they had some possible connection. There were a lot of books on the shelf, and directly above the hobbit door on a floating shelf were some antique pieces of pottery.
I don't know if this could be it, but those bowls.
Yeah, these.
They're like these old, they were some of the things that came with the house.
And those are probably John's?
They were John's.
Yeah, definitely. We didn't even.
Can I help one? Yeah.
Yeah, they were always here. They look so cool, we just left them.
Did he travel a lot, New Mexico, like he did love New Mexico?
He had to.
Yeah, because he has all the, we like even have little Pueblo ornaments and stuff.
Suddenly, in this moment, Michelle felt the male presence and said that he was angrily yelling for us to shut up.
This is why this room is so heavy.
The mean one just said shut up.
He said shut up. He's everywhere.
Did you ever feel him upstairs or is it mostly down here?
It's down here.
I wonder what's down here. I know that Kevin feels a presence like that when he works at night up there. Yeah, like when he's around you, what does it feel like the energy's doing?
It just feels offensive. Or aggressive.
Yeah, but it's, that room is so heavy. And it's even heavier than it was. Like when we came earlier, it was just in that corner. And now it's like he's missed. That's the only way to describe it. He's not a place, he's
spread out.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
When it gets to this hour and it's for the rest of the night.
Yeah, I feel he's like,
this is my.
Yeah.
And I have to turn lights on and kind of get a whole.
I'm not just chilled. I'm cold in my bones.
Yeah.
He spreads out like a mist.
Yeah.
Jeffrey said something about there's an energy that only comes out at night. He said downstairs there's usually like, he wasn't feeling anything. He was like, at night, that's when.
It's so, like it was so centralized earlier and now it's like you've fumigated the whole room with him.
I'll be like, I have work I need to do.
Yeah.
And I'll go, I'm not going in there tonight.
Yeah.
We circled back to talking about the male presence and if he could be tied to an object, possibly.
I was wondering if it was a land thing.
No, only the old lady is attached to the wind.
That's what she's getting. So this is definitely came with
something here, or something we brought in. Or.
And it could be the house still, too, because the house has so much history.
It does.
It still could move here.
Do you feel that? That cloud, that foggy evil upstairs too?
Oh yeah, I've never really felt it down here.
Really?
No.
All I know is that this one that Kevin and I feel has got to go. He's got to go. This spirit, I feel like he can go in and out of people too. Because I felt invaded.
And I felt that off Kevin, too, when he says that he gets angry. It's like your senses are being invaded, almost like you're inhaling spray paint or something.
I wanted to leave Michelle downstairs alone for a bit and give her some space and quiet time to see if this presence would finally reveal itself. I was upstairs with the family for a while and then heard her calling us back downstairs. Apparently, she had sat in the main downstairs living area just outside the guest room and meditated a while. The male presence showed up.
Update me on this real fast. What did you...
He was circling me right here. It's like a wind. And then I could feel something here to my right. And then I could feel a structure. He's like this wide. I could feel him solid. And then something, Kevin, you started walking this way and he broke into a fog again. Where? Like I could feel him solid. Like right here, he was swirling me. And it's kind of making me feel like I was on a boat, like lightheaded. And then I felt something here. And then I don't know. It was like he was like right here. Like I was, like if I was to do this, it was just like right here. And then all of a sudden it was, and he was gone. And I turn around and you're right there.
Whoa. I'm not him.
No, no, you're not. But you walked in and he went.
Yeah, I think he moves around.
He went up.
So Michelle finally had made some contact with this darker energy. However, it was still being elusive. After this short break, our spiritual practitioner, Alexis, will arrive and will hopefully get to the bottom of what's going on here. Stay tuned. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp Therapy Online. For 10% off your first month, go to betterhelp.com/nightowl. In the course of our lifetimes, many of us find ourselves in situations that we don't know how to handle. This could include personal relationship problems, struggles with unwanted changes in our lives, dealing with grief, anxiety, or maybe even depression. Some of these situations can be extremely trying, both emotionally and physically, and without the proper guidance and help, can be very detrimental to our lives. Therapy can be just what you need to get through those tough times, and there's no easier way to get that therapy than BetterHelp. BetterHelp Therapy Online is one of the world's largest networks of professional, licensed, and experienced therapists who can guide you in dealing with all those tough situations. BetterHelp is entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to fit your unique schedule. Therapy has been incredibly crucial to me. I've needed the expertise and guidance to help me get through tough situations that I just had no idea how to get through. It's helped me to cope with the situation, given me new ways to navigate it, and provided me with a game plan to help me continue moving forward. Therapy can be that saving guide for you too and help you get back on track to being the best you possible. If you're going through your own personal struggle right now, then BetterHelp Therapy Online would be a great option for professional, convenient, and affordable therapy. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/nightowl today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/nightowl. Alexis, my pal and team spiritual practitioner, had just arrived. I wanted to get him up to speed and also see what he was picking up, as he'd never been here at night either.
This place is very different at night.
So I was going to ask you if you feel something. Before we go, are you feeling anything different?
It just doesn't feel the same.
Yeah.
Like when I come here during the day, it feels like I just want to take a nap.
Yeah.
But here, it feels a little weird. Yeah, it feels a little off.
Okay.
Even this room, which is the room I like.
Yeah.
Like, it's almost like when we're coming in here, I almost like did not want to come in here. Yeah.
We updated him on everything we knew currently about this darker presence.
Based on the mist shaping, what is, and do you have any insight on that as far as spiritual?
I mean, if it's a spirit, it's just a very, very advanced one. If it's able to
I've
do that.
I've always thought it's very old.
Yeah.
He's before all of these other spirits.
Do you think he's tied to the land?
I don't know. Could it be tied to something in this original?
Because I very much feel like he is not on a book or on a, he came with humans that then died and he stayed.
We now took Alexis down to the guest room to see what he could feel there.
Where are you drawn to? Yeah.
It just feels like you're walking through a bunch of heavy curtains. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
The last time I felt anything like that was whenever I was at this event and they had a coffin, a real tiled coffin. Mm. And I couldn't actually get into the area because it felt like it's even hard to breathe in here. It's weird. It is very, very different here at night. Like, it's almost kind of fooling me, you know what I mean? Because the last time we were here during the day, it was great.
It was great, yeah.
I took Alexis back up to the parlor to discuss theories in private, just me and him, and to get some ideas of what he was thinking we needed to do here spiritually.
What should we do tonight and tomorrow? Like, I know you had a plan.
The only thing I can think of is doing ceremony to basically empower the good spirits and, like, clear out the not-so-good ones.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously we could open up a space for, like, if you're ready to move forward.
Yeah.
If Michelle's willing to kind of help guide that, because I can't see
what
she can see.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, we can do that. I need to ask her what she thinks about this darker male, if you need to do anything specific to, like, really put up extra barriers or boundaries. I don't know yet.
I don't know if I mean, I could, but honestly, the best thing we could do in that situation is they would need some kind of protection. He would need to wear some kind of protection maybe when he's around here, which, I mean, even she was like, oh yeah, he wears things like all the time.
Yeah.
So it could even be a matter of just like putting some energy on those objects that he wears. But for the daughter, we would need to do something for the actual room itself.
Yeah. 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 Okay.
Alexis and I pulled the family and Michelle into the upstairs front room where he explained his plan for the night. As Alexis began to prep his materials, Michelle came to me to express something she was feeling.
Yeah, since we made the plan and decided and Alexis came in here to start, it felt like I've got a grown man just pushing down on my shoulders, really, really heavy. So I came in here and told Alexis he knows what we're doing.
Okay.
And I don't think it's the first time people have attempted to do this because he's very familiar.
Alexis now began the initial part of the ceremony. Now Alexis wanted to move into the second phase of the ceremony.
All right, what I've done essentially is I've honored all the directions, above and below as well. And this is gonna open up the space for any energies that wanna leave. It's basically opening up a portal, direct communication to higher being, God, whatever you wanna call it. At this time, as a collective, I would like everybody to focus on those spirits here that want to let go, that want to move forward, and say, you can go, you can move on. You don't need to be here anymore.
Alexis now began this phase of the ceremony, and it was at this time he instructed Michelle to go to the parlor and help the little boy Henry move on. As I was there, I watched Michelle work with Henry in the parlor. She pointed to her pant leg to say he was standing and hugging her. I sadly wasn't able to capture it with my phone camera at the time, but I saw her pant leg visibly press in and move. He eventually moved on and was released, according to Michelle. Following this second phase, we were now going to move downstairs to perform the third and final phase of this ceremony, the actual cleansing, which would remove the bad or negative energies from the home. Alexis finished the last part of this cleansing, but clearly felt that it was necessary to return tomorrow morning for one more ceremony.
Okay. We definitely need to do a ceremony tomorrow.
Okay.
Because I'm feeling like the house is getting clean, but the outside of the house
needs
some extra, like, protection.
Yeah.
Push.
Okay.
Before we left, Alexis also cleansed every individual in the home. We were going to be back in the morning to perform the land ceremony he mentioned earlier, but I had a unique call I wanted to share with you before we jump to the next day. Because this call I made later after our investigations, it was a call to one of Sherry's best friends, Kimberly. I had no knowledge of what she was about to reveal to me, but was shocked with what unfolded on our call.
My name's Kimberly, and I have been best friends with Sherry since we were 14. We like to come down to Austin, I mean, a couple of times a year. Once they moved into the Pompeii house, of course, we had to come down and see it. And the first time I came down with my two boys. My husband stayed here at home, so it was just me and my two little ones. And at the time, they hadn't been in the house that long, so my boys were still pretty little. And so, of course, like during the daytime, the house doesn't give me really any heebie-jeebies at all, I guess you could say. But our first night there, her daughter, Jolene, and my boys are not far apart in age, but since I have two boys and she has a girl, we normally, you know, have them sleep in separate spaces. I mean, even when they were little. And so the downstairs guest bedroom, which we call the Hobbit room, and the reason for that is because there is a little Hobbit door that leads to the outside area. So we had put the kids to bed and the boys were sleeping in that guest bedroom with me. And she had a big blow up mattress kind of in front of the Hobbit door. So we stayed up late like we like to do. So it's probably like 2-3 o'clock in the morning by the time I come downstairs to go to bed. Jo is asleep in her room, which is, you know, across the hall, you know, down ways. And then my boys are asleep in the guest bedroom. And both boys were asleep on the guest bed, and I was just going to sleep on the little blow-up mattress that was by the Hobbit door. But I go to get into the little blow-up mattress bed. It was like a full-size bed. And I'm literally, I can't sleep. I'm rustling back and forth, back and forth. So I'm like, what am I going to do? How am I going to sleep in here? My two kids are in here. I can't leave them in here by themselves. So I legit get up out of the bed, turn a light on, and I get Nash, which is my youngest, I get him out of the bed and literally put him in the bed with me so I can go to sleep. And I am at that time, I wasn't even 40 yet. So in my late 30s, a grown person can't even sleep in a bed by myself in that room, because I had freaked myself out so bad. So, of course, wake up the next morning, feel, you know, totally fine because it's daylight, open the windows in there, the curtains, and it's beautiful. And I don't feel weird in there in the daytime at all. But at nighttime, that's a different story. So this last year, my husband and I and the boys, we kind of had made like a thing where we would come down every January and spend a couple days down in Austin with Sherry and Kevin and Joe and just kind of go do all things Austin. And even with my husband in the room, like our first night there, he went to bed before I did. Because of course, I want to stay up and talk to Sherry and, you know, catch up on life. And I come downstairs and he's perfectly asleep in the bed. And of course, yet again, I'm not comfortable. I cannot relax. I can't. So then fast forward to sometime in the spring, I can't remember the exact month, but this time I come down with my girlfriends to stay in the Pompeii house. And Sherry stays downstairs in that room. And me and my other best friend sleep upstairs in Sherry and Kevin's room. I have no problem going to sleep. Not weirded out, not wrestling around, not worried about a thing. But downstairs in the Hobbit room is a totally different experience. And it's at nighttime. Daytime, great. Nighttime, it's dark. The room is just heavier.
Nothing happened, just it's more of an ominous feeling?
Yeah, nothing physical. And I am a freak about paying attention to all details. So I would notice, you know, like if something was moved or off or anything like that. In the daytime, it doesn't feel weird at all. It's something about the night just feels a lot heavier. I've never seen a person or anything like that in the space, or nothing's been moved. But yeah, so that's kind of my experience with the space.
Two other questions. And again, it's okay if you don't have an answer for this, okay? Like, don't force it to fit. I just like to know the truth. I'm curious if in that room, did you have a feeling of, was it a feeling of like you felt like someone was there watching you? What was that feeling? Or was it just, you were just uncomfortable to be uncomfortable? Or did you actually feel like eyes on you or something?
I don't necessarily feel eyes per se. I kind of have this weird thing with there's a little arched door, you know, like the Hobbit door is what we call it. Even the closet door. I don't know. Like, I don't feel like there's an actual body looking at you. I don't know. There's just a heaviness in the room. I don't know how to really describe that, but it doesn't feel like that in the day at all.
You were kind of hitting on it too. This is my second question. It was like, is there an area in the room that felt heavier to you? If you could articulate it, and you kind of did already, but was there an area that felt like that more so than just like any part of the room?
Yeah, 100%. Right by that little Hobbit door, there's a bookshelf that's like built into the wall. And that's where that blow-up mattress literally was sitting, you know, like right next to that.
Sherry never has issues in this room, doesn't feel scared, and has only had the double doors open on their own from time to time. But Kimberly, who doesn't know what Michelle was picking up and feeling in this room, felt the same exact way and also felt this in the same exact area of the room that Michelle did, near the Hobbit door and bookshelf. The reason I wanted to play this for you here was because what I'm about to play for you next relates yet again to the same exact room and the same exact spot. It was the next morning, and I arrived and took Michelle down to the guest room where she had wanted to go and feel things out. To my surprise, she was still not feeling good in this area.
Same heavy feeling as yesterday in this corner.
When I came down here, you didn't get to hear this, but when I came down here to check the room last night, the air felt so thick I felt like I couldn't breathe.
Choke. Yeah.
And I was standing right in that area where you all are standing, because I came to check and I was like, that upstairs felt so nice. And then Kevin was like, the downstairs feels really creepy still.
Yeah.
And then I came in here and was like, I can't breathe. I gotta go upstairs.
It's very heavy.
Yeah.
I can tell it when I breathe in.
And that's not normal for you typically, or?
No, this is like my safe haven space.
And I feel bad because we came and this came about, but I guess we're getting to something maybe that...
Yeah, it stirred it up.
That's maybe dormant, or that just tries to keep... Maybe it stays hidden from you.
Yeah.
I still wasn't sure what was going on in this room, but Alexis had just arrived, and he began prepping for his outdoor ceremony.
Let's get an update real quick. Alexis, do you have anything that you're picking up or that you want to express about, like, what we're doing or anything like that?
The biggest message I got is when they... I mean, this happens all the time, though. When they were building the house, they didn't ask for permission from the land. They carved into the stone, didn't they?
Well, yeah, and then he built all those walls and everything with stone from the land. Yeah, and then they cut into the stone for the foundation.
Yeah. So that's like the one reason why they're kind of like, well, we don't want to go to that area. You know, like the spirit, the good spirits, the land spirits, the native spirits are just kind of like, well, they built on the space without even asking us.
Oh, okay. Kind of. And so you can go and kind of...
I'm just going to kind of let them know, like, hey, they're here. They didn't do that. I was already here before they got here. They just, you know, give them that same respect. They'll give you the same respect.
Okay.
Alexis set up outside directly below the parlor windows, which is also just outside the Hobbit door in the guest room near the pond. He began his land ceremony, and we all watched and participated when necessary, offering things to the land and following Alexis as he moved from singing to land offering to a fire pit on the back patio where we were going to close with burnt offerings. When the ceremony was concluded, Alexis grabbed me and needed to share something he saw during his prayers.
I did get an image when I was doing prayers for the spirits of the land, and specifically I saw a skull. And then I remember you told me that they found a skull.
Yeah.
Does anybody know what happened to the skull?
We need to find out.
Somebody took it, but somebody also put it here. David, the old roommate, I think put it here, and then John, the owner, found out and was so upset with him for burying a human skull on the property that I believe he took it.
Well, the image I got is I was calling forth good spirits, saying only good spirits are allowed here. If there's any spirits that are not here, unless you welcome them in, they're not welcomed, all those things. And then the skull was like...
Like, I can confirm. No. I got the same thing. I got a skull.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, with a rock on top of it. Like, I could see the dirt kind of sideways, so I could tell it was a human skull, but there was also, like, a rock on top of it, a flat stone. Did you get the flat stone?
I just saw if somebody put a skull, like, this close to my face.
Mm. Oh, wow. I didn't. And I saw it actually in the
bright
earth.
Red, like, hot fire red.
Oh, really?
I wonder, my memory is saying it might have been from an indigenous person or a Native American. And then I think that's really what upset John, because he was...
He was really into that.
Yeah, he studied the culture, and we have a ton of books about it. And then this roommate, David, who you guys may meet, buried this skull.
Sherry decided to text John's former roommate, David, to see if he'd share more about this human skull that he apparently had at some point during his time living there with John. Which was news to us, as we were only told in the interviews that John had unearthed the human skull while creating the trails down to the canyon. While we waited, Michelle shared something else that she got with the imagery she had of the same skull.
You saw red, but I saw red clay powder.
Mm.
Like, so maybe my dirt is your red at the same time. Because I saw, because I'm from East Texas, we have all that red clay powder.
Yeah,
that's what I saw, not necessarily... as the skull,
But I just kind of, that hue was in the, but this is not here, though.
No.
No. That's not here.
But it's the same stones as here. So they must have found it
from somewhere.
So would there be red clay deposits in Austin somewhere around here?
There's out more toward Lockhart area.
I wanted to sit Sherry down in the parlor and just share some of our final thoughts. But before we did, I wanted to pull Alexis aside and talk to him about something.
The last thing, though, I'm just worried about, she's still feeling like, she so strongly feels that this darker thing is still around.
It is.
Okay, it is.
But I think that in time, it will go away.
Okay.
I think it is around, and I think that's one of the reasons why I wanted to do ceremony, because I was like, if we didn't kick it out, which I don't think we did, I felt it last night, we need to do ceremony to bring good energy back in here so that it doesn't want to be here.
Mm, okay.
You know what I mean? And I empowered everybody who lived in the home and said, if they say you're not allowed to be here, you're not allowed to be here. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I told Sherry last night. If you start to feel some weird things, aftershocks, whatever it may be, it's like, remember that you're in control. You're the one that's still alive. They're not.
Yeah.
You know? And I explained that to her, and I said, look, if it gets scary, because like, you can't see who they are. You don't know who they are.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, you're the live one. They're not.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And you overpowered them. So I explained that to her, and I was like, you're the boss,
yeah.
And you have to stay. And I get that more so from her and less from Kevin,
yeah.
That she's kind of the boss of the house in that okay. sense. Not yeah. like in a bad way or power play or anything, but in the sense that like she gets to decide who comes and who goes.
Yeah.
You know, and I told her, like, you need to remember that.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
John's roommate never got back to Sherry regarding the skull. So Alexis, Michelle, Sherry, and I sat up in the parlor to just share all of our final thoughts and hopefully put a close to this case for now.
So we're just trying to wrap up like what we picked up. It's been challenging because she's getting a lot here. And it's like, there's a lot that we'd have to sift through to figure out. And I don't think we're going to solve the story.
Yeah.
Nothing lines up with, because I have every owner who owned it. There's not like the things that connect. And I went through it last night and this morning just to see if I can make any connections. That's not saying that what you're getting is wrong. It's just I don't know what the connection is right. And why, because you've gotten valid things. So where are these images coming from?
Yeah.
I don't know if we're going to get answers for that. I was talking to Alexis about it, and we're just like, well, what really is the focus here? The main focus is this dark energy, the presence yeah. that Kevin admitted to feeling, your daughter admits to feeling too. I don't know exactly. You know, like it's yeah. been a long time. You see it in a mist form, and then it takes shape.
Yeah.
It still feels present here today, yeah. according to Alexis and to you.
Yeah.
So
and I've never felt it, but then I felt it last night.
Yeah. So we brought it to light because it's been here. It's been maybe affecting just Kevin a little bit here and there. So from this point on, though, the reason Alexis did these ceremonies is he's going to share with you what the whole purpose is and why this one today would be sort of like the final thing that he leaves you with, but there's still more that you'll probably have to do on your own here.
Whatever this dark energy is, I feel like it's here, but it's like hiding somewhere in a corner where we can't see it or we can't get to it, possibly even in like an attic or somewhere. But these other energies that are coming in, he's not fond of it, right? So it's not, after some time, it's going to be like, you know what? I don't want to be here anymore.
Yeah.
So it might still linger every once in a while. And if you feel it on, like, get out. I told you not to be here. You have to be firm with it. It's like if a person came into your house, like, get out. You don't belong here. So just do things more with intention.
Yeah.
You know?
Is there any other questions you have?
No, I'm just interested in the skull, but David's no longer yeah. getting back to me.
and with
skull.
With that, it's like it's kind of going to be open. We don't know. We will never probably know the full history of that thing. If it was of an indigenous person, then it could have really fueled these other native spirits to also yes. just be like, this is not
that could have made things
area
a lot
that
worse.
Is respectful to us. You know yeah. what I mean? So now that he's done the whole offering an apology and acknowledgement, it's like they're going to be able to be like, okay, we're coming back here.
Yeah.
So, and as long as y'all continue to respect the land and do what he was saying,
yeah.
it's not going to push them away.
Cool.
Yeah. Even if you find out the history of that, I don't know if you need to do anything specific, right?
Oh, of the skull?
If they find the history
no,
of that.
No. I let the skull know, like, hey, that's out of our hands. That was the previous owner, not them.
So. Yeah. Sorry. So he included that. So it's like,
yeah.
whatever, even if it does come to you and you're like, oh, I found this, it's not like you need to do anything extra for what happened.
I wasn't happy that we didn't get all the answers, but I still felt good about what we did and what Alexis had left the family with. But just as we were about to get up and say our goodbyes, Sherry got a text from John's old roommate, David.
I just got a freaking novel about the skull. Like, David Petard just sent me.
This is the guy who used to live here with the previous owner.
Oh, we should tell Alexis and them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She just got a novel written to her about the skull.
I was why isn't he getting back to me? It's because...
He was writing that.
Can you read it or no?
Chapter 1, part 1.
Yes. Well, it says... Before I took my 4-year sabbatical, which began with my move to Austin and into the Pompeii house, I lived in Farmington, New Mexico, right in the middle of a huge desert area filled with prehistoric Native American archaeological sites. At that time, it was probably legal to hunt for artifacts, even by digging into ruins on public land. Someone evidently had dug up a grave and kept the well-preserved skull of the person who had been buried. It was given to a woman I knew who thought I would like it because I did have a small collection of animal skulls, and so it came to be in my possession. I thought it dirty enough to benefit by putting it through a wash cycle in the dishwasher. But I didn't count on my housemate finding it when he was looking for clean dishes. So that was amusing to contemplate how shocked he must have been when he did, as I had not forewarned him. It was obviously prehistoric. The teeth were ground down as they would be eating stone ground corn with resulting small grains of sand becoming a part of the meal. But I didn't know what to do with it. I'm not superstitious, but it seemed like something I wouldn't want many people to know I had in my possession. But about that time, 1986, I decided to undertake my sabbatical and to begin first move to Austin. The skull came with me, and like a lot of my stuff that I didn't really use or need often, it went up in the attic in a cardboard box and stayed there for the next 14 years. So it was in the attic here for 14 years. I almost forgot about it, but around the fall of 1999, when I began to sort through my stuff while moving out of John's house because his girlfriend was moving in, I had to confront again the question of what to do with it. I still felt a bit queasy about it, never really wanting it in the first place. I didn't want to take it with me, and I didn't have a lot of time to think about it either. I decided the best thing to do was rebury it and let it suffer the natural deterioration of time. I took it down the slope from John's house, found a random spot, dug a hole, and in it went, never to see the light of day again, so I supposed. Flash forward to 2016, John was gradually expanding the trails around and below his house, and yes, there he encountered the skull. The Sherlock Holmes fantasies he had about himself were coming true. Here was a great mystery, and whom better to discover and understand it than he? But caution prevailed. First he called criminal law, as for all John knew, the skull was of someone who had been murdered. Together, they excavated it fully and, finding no other bones, realized no crime would explain it. It goes on and on. Oh. Let me see. He was intending to take it to archaeologists working for State of Texas, but I poured water on his intrigue and excitement, telling him I had buried the skull. He told their friend Bill about it, as was his resolve to return it to an Indian reservation in New Mexico and rebury it there, as this felt like the moral thing to do. Bill was aghast, having listened to John complain of the stress of having so many things to do. No one knows what happened. Many months later, in the fall of 2016, Bill and I were visiting John, and the subject of the skull came up briefly when one of us asked him about it. He only replied that he had found a moral solution, but that he would not be telling us what he had done with it.
Okay, we don't want to stretch, but that dark presence energy, you have felt it to be old.
Very old.
But could it have been not here old? It could have just been old in the sense of time.
Oh, yeah.
But the thing is, I don't get how these spirits know it. Unless they're just saying, we know it's here. Not like we had it during our time.
I think it's angry.
Well, what's interesting is you said red clay. It's from New Mexico.
Yeah. Oh. And I said New Mexico downstairs in that corner with the bowl.
Yeah, she called out New Mexico down there, but she thought the owner went to New Mexico and got stuff.
Yeah.
I think it's either here or like he just didn't get rid of it properly and it probably got rid of in a not so great way.
Like got rid of the physical thing, but the spiritual thing probably stayed.
Well, yeah, it was literally buried on this property at one point.
Yeah.
And then also, John is again. Not the guy that would just like get rid of it. He
was very...
If it's not buried here, he...
did something with it.
They put it away somewhere.
The poor thing got dug up from its grave.
Yeah.
And reburied. Then hauled around and then buried.
Washed in the dishwasher.
And then dug. Oh, washed then the washed.
Washer.
Washed. And then.
David.
I mean, he's been dug up two times already.
He just sent a follow-up. It was discovered after his death in the garage, which is where Joe's room is now.
Oh, yeah.
But it was in the garage.
I think we found what the source
that's
of that was.
That's the tie.
Yeah.
And the dark figure outside of Joe's room.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just fell off of me when y'all said that.
Yeah.
That light just...
Well, it's funny. Before you said that, I was just about to say, it wants us to know the story, and then it'll, like...
Release.
In the end, though, even though we're making this revelation, what we've done is the right thing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Next absolutely. Ceremony,
oh, so. It felt so good.
So, yeah. And unknowingly, it still is the right... I mean, that's kind of why he's good at what he does. He kind of picks up on that intuitively.
Yeah.
And it seems like this is a more very plausible answer for the dark thing.
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
No, I was going to say, it does feel like something released, like you said, something dropped.
We had David's text revealing a lot about the skull's history. But when we left the house, leaving Sherry with notes on what to keep her eyes on and how to continue keeping her home safe in our absence, I couldn't help but think I needed to know as much as I could about this skull and hear its final conclusion. So I asked Sherry if she wouldn't mind messaging David to see if he'd be willing to share everything, including where the skull ended up following discovering it in John's garage following his death. He actually agreed to do a call. Note, much of this call that you're about to hear is a repeat of what you heard in the text, but as Alexis said, he felt the main thing the spirit wanted was for the story to be heard. So I'm going to give that space. So here is the entire call I had with David, John's old roommate.
To me, it was pretty obviously not anything recent because it had, first of all, the story was that a guy had dug it up when he was looking for pottery and stuff like that. And second, it was the teeth were ground down as they are when you use Makati stone instrument to ground down corn. Meal will have tiny particles of stone in it. So that's what, you know, when you eat that meal, it affects your teeth. It was pretty clearly, you know, prior to the Navajo, probably, we'd call them Anasazi, I think is what they're called now. Anyhow, so she gave it to me and I was willing to take it. I didn't have a particular desire for it, but I could understand why she thought I might, and I wasn't sure whether I did or not. I took it, and it was had a lot of dirt in the skull, you know, the brain compartment, and I just put it in the dishwasher and washed it, which was the easiest way to do it, I thought. Kind of shocked my housemate when he found it without knowing that it was there at one point. But I didn't know what to do with it, and not too long after that, I packed up, this is about 87, I guess, and I packed up and moved to Austin. And I had always kept up with John, and so because we'd kept up and were good friends all that time, it was easy call for us to say, hey, let me move in with you. And so that's what I did. So I took everything I had with me, and that included that skull. But when I got there, there wasn't room for everything in the downstairs bedroom that I occupied. So I put a lot of stuff in the attic above the parlor, and that skull was among those items. And I didn't really look at it again until I moved out in, I think, August of 2000. At that point in time, I had to decide what to do with stuff. And when I saw that skull, I just thought, I don't know why I have this. It didn't seem like it would be something that I wanted before I got it. And I just didn't feel right about having it. By that time, I was a little bit more sophisticated about the Native Americans' attitude about archaeologists and people just out looking for artifacts and stuff, and how they dealt with things that, from a Native American standpoint, were being treated without respect. And so, of course, I didn't know where it had actually been dug up. I didn't know who dug it up. And I didn't have any logical way to do anything with it in my mind other than to treat it like any other human remains would be treated, which was to bury it. And I went down slope from his house and buried it in a spot and thought that would be the last time would know anything about that skull. But about 10 years later, John, who liked to work outdoors and develop the landscaping of his property, was creating a series of trails down from his house, and he had come across the skull. He had excavated it by pure accident, I guess. And his first thought was that he had come upon the remains of a crime victim. So he called a criminal attorney that he and I are both mutual friends of, and this guy came over, and they fairly quickly after that realized that there's no other bones around. This is not a skull that has died within the last 400 or 500 years at least, you know. And it's not from any culture other than one that will wear their teeth down as that one had been. So they then regarded it as an archaeological phenomena. And John called me up quite excited to tell me about it. And I had to pop his bubble in that and tell him exactly what had happened. So after that, he had sort of the same perception or feeling about it that I did, that it did not belong in his collection of stuff. It needed to be, he thought it should be taken back to New Mexico. Even though he didn't know where it would go, he just thought New Mexico in general was, it should be taken back somewhere there. And that was his goal. Some time went by, and then he, visiting him and another friend of ours was there who also knew about this. And we asked him, what did you do with it? And he was coy about that. And he said that he had done something with it, but he was not going to tell us what. And that was it. But when after he died in 2017, Bill, who was one of his executors, found the skull in the garage in a box. And so he really had done nothing with it. And Bill contacted me because he knew that it originally flowed through me to John. And so he offered it to me, not because I wanted it particularly, but because if anybody was going to make any effort to do something with it that was respectful, it would be me because I had previously been trying to do that, and so had John. So I took it, but rather than do anything myself with it, I contacted the woman that had given it to me back in 79 or 80, or whenever that was. And the reason I contacted her was because she had become more intensely interested in her Native American background, which was from the Choctaw tribe. And we had kept up for many years and we're still in touch. And since she had given it to me, I thought it would be appropriate for her to try to find a way to handle it best. She lived in Prescott, Arizona, and she had a lot of friends that were Native American, not just Navajo, which were, you know, the big reservations nearby, fairly nearby, but also Choctaw, which is their reservation in Oklahoma. But one way or the other, I thought that she would, not herself, but she would find somebody who would know best how to handle it and that it would be treated respectfully. She agreed to do that on condition that I never asked her what she did with it. So that's the way that has been left.
Many months following our last visit there, I checked in on Sherry and the family. I was very glad to hear that things were going incredibly well.
I feel like, well, you know, I didn't sense a whole lot before, but I feel like everything's great now, and especially with Jo sleeping in her bed through the night and being more comfortable going up and down the stairs, and I haven't seen or felt anything, but you have more of the experiences than I do.
It got better the day, because the night you guys were here, it was, boy, like, that was the worst it's ever been. It was, like, really, and they went to bed up here, and I remember going down there alone in the night, because just, I was like, it was very intense. But then the next day after you guys did that ceremony, it was gone.
It was like the first one aggravated the spirit, and we all kind of felt it. And I think Kevin didn't come outside for the second ceremony because you were kind of like...
I just was freaked. I was like, if this just doesn't work and this is what it's going to be like, I was getting prepared for that.
I felt you were kind of hesitant to do it, and we never push anybody, but I was really curious about that, like what you were processing during that time.
I was just like, I don't know. I also felt like I was in the way. I just was like, I need to back off and let you guys do what you're doing. But yeah. So what do you think, Joe? Has it been better?
Yeah.
What do you feel?
Nothing.
Yeah. I still feel like John and the kind of like house spirit stuff. And I've also noticed that I think when we have guests stay, they, like, a lot of times there's, like, an extra energy that maybe they bring in. But it's not that whatever that thing was is totally gone.
Sadly, there are still many unanswered questions lingering with the strange occurrences at the Pompey House. Like the mystery behind the little girl with stockings, or why there were so many feelings in that guest room. Although one tie we did make was that it was David's room when he lived there with John. But we still may never know what it was that so many felt in that room and in that specific area by the Hobbit door. However, we are still working on some aspects of this case that are more private and we won't be able to share with you currently on the show. But I think it's important to take this away from this case. Always honor the land that you live on, its history, and its people, especially the dead and their remains. Because it can have a lasting effect on the places that people move into and their innocent children set foot in. Our series at the historic Pompey House has reached an end, for now at least. Sherry and her family stay in touch with me, and they know we'll always be here if something just so happens to creep back out from the shadows of their historic home. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Night Owl Podcast. We'll have a new series or episode coming to you next month. I also need to give a huge shout out to my team member, Alexis. He's been killing it and doing such an incredible job with his spiritual practices on the show. I need to give his practice and his classes a shout out here. If you're interested in the world of witchcraft and looking for a place to revitalize your practice, look no further than City Alchemist Witch Shop, nestled in the heart of Austin's historic East 6th Street. This esoteric purveyor offers everything from candles and crystals to books and other ritual items. But that's not all. City Alchemist also provides a range of personalized services to help you on your spiritual journey. Whether you need guidance, a reading, or spiritual cleansing, their friendly and knowledgeable staff are there to help. And don't forget to check out their ritual prepared candles, perfect for all your needs. Can't make it to Austin? Not a problem. Most of their product services and classes are available online at cityalchemist.com. So you can explore the magical world of City Alchemist from anywhere in the world. Don't wait. Start your spiritual journey today. And support Alexis while you do it. Be sure to subscribe to our newsletter on our website, thenightowlpodcast.com. Follow us on Instagram or Facebook at The Night Owl Podcast. And consider becoming a patron and supporting our show on patreon.com/thenightowlpodcast to stay up to date with our show's news and events. Stay restless out there. I'd like to thank my investigative team, Alexis, Franklin, and Jeffrey, for going on these crazy adventures with me, and Michelle for joining us on this special case. Nicholas Fair for his talented musical contributions to this show, my dad Sam for his incredible historical research, Mikey for his assistance editing, Tristan and Devin for their help with our Night Owl events, Sandra for keeping us all on schedule and on budget, my partner Peyton for encouraging me every time the workload for the show weighs heavy on my shoulders, and for her assistance editing this particular episode, and last but not least, David Dalton of Driftwork Sound for mastering every single episode on the tight turnarounds I give him. Please support their works by visiting our website, thenightowlpodcast.com, and clicking on the About tab. There you can find links to all their individual works and websites. This podcast was mastered by David Dalton of Driftwork Sound. Do you have a song that could use a professional touch to get it across the finish line? Do you wish you could remove the sound of a loud air conditioner or distracting mouth noises from your podcast recording? Whatever your issue, David can repair and enhance your audio and help you achieve rich, full, professional sound at industry standard loudness levels. Quit struggling with audio engineering and get back to creating. To discuss your options, reach out to David at driftworksound.com. That's DRIFT worksound.com, and set your creative self free.